Hello and welcome to the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
And we are here to talk about a whole bunch of stuff tonight. We're going to talk about Handmaid's Tale, American Gods, maybe a little House of Cards. We'll see. How the nights goes. We'll see how the nights goes. Speaking of nights, which is the penultimate, no, that was the final episode of Handmaid's Tale. We've been gone for 3 weeks. We missed Jezebel's The Breach.
Well, we didn't miss them. We watched them.
At night. And now we're going to podcast about them. I like this series a lot. And it has some amazing stuff in it. Mm-hmm. But I also have a few gripes. And I don't want to be the kind of guy who does my gripes first. So I want to turn it over to you.
You don't have any positive things to say?
No,
at all?
I do, but like I just notice, like in my any review I have, I tend to lead with the negative stuff, and I think that says something about me in a deep core level.
It does.
But I also know it's a son of a bitch to listen to, so I want to give you the floor because you wholly love this newborn child.
Yeah, I really liked the final three episodes and the season as a whole. I thought was really good. Elizabeth Moss did an amazing job, and you know. So do the people we love to hate, you know, the Waterfords and everyone else. That, you know, compared to the book, which I finished, and the show, which we finished, it's, I would say the book is just, has a lot less personality in it.
Would you compare it
and
to, like...
And that might be on purpose, but, you know, this show just has so many extra added layers, and maybe there might be too many. Hmm. We'll save that for the gripe session.
Okay. Do you feel like when you compared it to the book, does it compare favorably to like the Tom Parada original novel, The Leftovers, which is kind of like a black and white version of that story, and then you see season one, it's like Technicolor?
Right, exactly.
Would you say it's... So what are the parts that they've really injected color, pizzazzed up? Is it world building?
I don't...
Or... Well, what is more in the show that's not in the novel?
A lot more interpersonal relationships.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, do they go in less detail about her relationship with the commander and the driver and...
Right.
Wow. Because one of my criticisms is I feel like that I don't have a really good handle on especially the villains of the series. Like, I mean,
that's that injected color.
Yeah,
some of the real politic and, you know, some of the punishments and the infrastructure, things like that aren't really explained.
Really?
It's very just through the main character's perspective, exactly what she sees, exactly what she knows.
Did they have like a handmaid's doing the 2 minutes of hate and the stoning and all that? Is that in the novels?
I don't know if I want to get into exactly what the differences are between the two in case someone wants to read or I say something that you might consider
a book spoiler.
If they decide to bring some of those elements into the second season.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. I continued to really like the visual splendor. Like, the choice of having everybody in these monochromatic uniforms is really striking at times. Like, especially the loading screen image that Hulu always showed where it had the handmaid, I think it was Elizabeth Moss, standing in front of the wall that they were whitewashing
before the
Mexicans come. And that just scene of, like, the blood running down the wall with her staying in front of it.
Yeah. I mean... There's a lot of striking visuals.
Top notch. Also, like, the sound design, like, I noticed that, like, the eyes or the guardians have this, like, all-pervasive ear chatter that remind me a lot of the Combine forces from, like, Half-Life, which give you this very creepy, you know, otherly feel that, or other feel that nevertheless has this kind of oppressive authority on you. And it really, like, it made those guys in the black skull caps and the, you know, this creep me the fuck out.
Right. What did you think about the actual storyline that happened with Commander Waterford? Because I spent a lot of time talking to the women I work with, and they are still of the opinion that the Waterfords are sympathetic characters.
Okay. Because I think that's my number one complaint. This is why I've been chasing my tail the whole last week. A lot of times you get a villain, and it's a great villain. Like, you know, a Joffrey or a Patty from The Leftovers. And some of them are just like villainous and doesn't think there's any redeeming qualities at all. Like Joffrey, for example, right. Or Ramsay Bolton. And then you've got like Patty, where the more you get to know her and what she's been through, like you might not agree and she might still anger you with her actions, but you can kind of understand where they're coming from.
Right.
And I feel like the Waterfords, they are designed to be a Joffrey type character where you just are their motivations are kind of inscrutable. But then they're trying to give them this sympathetic, like, well, you know, Mrs. Waterford, she's this brilliant woman and she can't read anymore. She wrote the rule book. Like, that's I don't understand. And I do exactly. feel like these are odious characters that every once in a while they're injecting with humanity for me to catch feels on. And I don't like it.
I mean, it seems to be working for a lot of people, though. But
it's
easy to lose sight of the fact that, oh, well, you know, she just wants a baby, but she's ritually raping a woman to get that baby.
Yeah.
She beats that woman when she doesn't have the baby.
Yeah.
And she beats the woman when she finds out she has a baby and, you know, displays her daughter in front of her.
And some of that stuff is interesting because you could see that as like, this woman has no recourse to punish her husband. So she's going to punish this other woman because that's what you can do. This is this is perpetuating the cycle. But then they give the women power to dismember and maim their husbands at the end, which brings Commander Waterford to kind of heal for her.
Right.
That whole message, I don't feel like they understand what the hell they're trying to do with the people that make up the upper echelons. That's the thing. They are the most privileged, most powerful, and chief architects of this fucking regime. And I just don't feel like they can make me feel sympathetic towards them.
Yeah,
I don't appreciate the attempt.
Right.
But and what scares me, I guess, is when you're talking to people and they say that they're just unapologetically sympathetic. That is, I don't know that that's what they're wanting to do.
I don't know that anyone has said that or thinks that.
Well, I was just saying, going by what you said your friends were saying.
No, they're just saying that, you know, they see that she's evil, but they still feel sympathetic towards her.
Yeah.
Even if it's just a modicum, which I don't feel the same way.
So, okay, I can kind of get myself to feel sorry for her, but what about Commander Waterford? I mean, that's, I guess, all these guys who sit on the council or whatever it is, they all seem just like the biggest pieces of shit.
Right. He is.
I mean, the worst kind of...
I mean, bringing her into play Scrabble is more for his benefit than for her sanity.
Right.
And he is still continuing to rape her.
Right.
So, I mean, let's just keep boiling it down to that, shall we? Because that's all you have to remember.
Yeah.
But...
But that's the thing, and the other thing that I don't understand, I guess, is like a part of me... feels like the world building here is very inconsistent as well.
It's kind of fast and loose with this situation. Like, I don't see how if you ever put up with Janine's shit, then you'll always put up with Janine's shit because she's one of the few women who has had a baby. So you wouldn't squander that even if she throws herself off a bridge.
Right.
You know, like they threatened in the first few episodes, like you don't need your feet or your hands or legs to make babies.
Yeah.
I thought the horrifying thing
was going to be they're going to be like take her arms and legs off and she's just going to be a fucking womb cadaver or like something really horrific.
Right. Like who signed off on that idea ultimately to have the other handmaids stone her to death?
This is another problem. This thing has just all recently happened. There's no fucking way these guys, especially people led by Commander Waterford, because he knows what he's doing and he understands the way – he understands like his wife is a thinking, conscious individual with thoughts and capable of complex, nuanced understandings of things.
Right.
So he's not like fucking deluded. And a lot of the – the way that maybe some of these guys are. But if he's not sitting there like, look, guys, if you ask his handmaids who are – very few of them true believers, it seems like. The vast majority are people that we've conscripted and hate our guts.
Right.
If you ask them to stone their own because this guy extra raped her, you're going to have a bad time. Then they're not doing their job. That makes no sense to me.
Right. I don't think that was the reason. I thought they were stoning her because she tried to kill herself and failed.
No, and she tried to hurt. Also, no, she tried to hurt her child. She kidnapped the baby. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. You still, it makes no sense to ask the handmaids to carry that out.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Also, it doesn't also make internal sense that, you know, I feel like by their logic, they're harming unborn children. Like they could have made another kind of weird statement about, you know, reproductive health. I don't know. I feel very self-conscious being a guy bitching about the show. I have one more thing though.
All right, we'll make it quick.
Okay, it's again like the inconsistent world building because
with the
Jezebels, like I didn't like the Jezebel episode at all because I never because here's the thing, they made it so clear how many checkpoints you had to do to for a commander
and
in his an escorted
wife, and at some point his wife couldn't even make it through. That's how strict it was.
Yeah, through all these checkpoints, and then the next episode, what's her name?
Moira.
Just steals an eyes uniform and van and bops out.
Yep.
Gone. Yep. And next thing we see, she's staggering over the Canadian border.
Right.
That doesn't make a fucking lick of sense. It seems to violate the rules of the universe, which sends my suspension of disbelief crashing down. Also, I don't understand about whether this is a society where even the people on top take it seriously to the point they're going to amputate each other's arms for the indiscretions, or this is an old boys club that's like, oh, well, we can get away with it and we're going to overlook this stuff. Like, I don't feel like both of those attitudes can exist in the upper echelons of a society. A house divided against itself can't stand.
Right. I mean, I'm willing to forgive it because it's a fairly new society and we don't actually know what happened to Moira after that.
Maybe that fight's being fought internally.
The next couple checkpoints, there was only one guy on guard and the other guy ran out for a coffee and she ran them both down and that's how she got out.
Well, and the other
I don't really care so much as what it does, and that is sets up the hunt for each other next season, where Moira and Luke are together. Elizabeth Moss is ? Her daughter is still in America. So even if she gets out, they're coming back.
That's a very different. That's a very different story.
Absolutely, and I'm looking forward to it because. Huh.
So you think? Because I almost feel like that they won't be able to get Elizabeth Moss out of the handmaid's uniform because.
But,
number one, that's the kind of central conceit, and that's the interesting thing. And also, I can see them putting a situation where she's going to be a double agent, that she's going to, you know.
Absolutely. That's what I'm suggesting as well. That the only way to get back in and to get her daughter is you're going to have to play close to the vest and pretend to be a handmaid again, maybe.
But who could ask her to do that? Like volunteer,
or
like
Luke
that's...
becomes a commander, a guy who decides that I want to defect from Canada and I want to be one of you. And
I mean, that's,
you know,
that's starting to sound like
gambits.
Something Tarantino would come up with. He would cast Uma Thurman's like, okay, here's your deal. You're a French comfort woman that the German officers are going to be raping, and the Allies are going to contact you, and you're going to be a secret resistance officer,
but
and you're gonna let him rape because you're gonna. I mean, I could see that storyline, but like, wow, that's.
No, you don't even need the German analogy. That's exactly what's going to happen.
Oh, really? So you okay?
I mean, I'm just saying that was the. There's no book to base it off anymore, so we don't know where it's going.
Yeah, that's just.
But what do you?
That's a whole other level of fucked up for the Allies to ask you to do something.
What
like
do you
that.
Think about the way that ended?
I mean, it's a big cliffhanger, right? You've got the driver, who is Nick.
Mm-hmm. Who for the first time ever made me feel something while he was on screen when he put his hand on her belly.
Yeah.
I don't know why I like that, but...
Yeah, and he's saying,
like,
trust me. So it's like, is the resistance powerful enough to commandeer a detail of eyes/guardians to, you know, do their bidding? Or who do they have that's really high up on the inside? Like, I don't know. There's just a lot of possibilities because I don't think that she's in actual trouble. Well... more than baseline how, you know, fucked up her situation is. I don't think she's going to go die. I think she's going to be...
She's got the golden ticket in her belly.
But they're... Okay.
I mean, what do you
do?
That's
true.
There's nothing they really can do that's too harsh unless they
really
want to risk
another
life.
But that's the thing. They fucking cattle prodded her when she was pregnant, or when they thought she was pregnant before.
Well, that's what bothered me about that scene before. She never said she was pregnant until she was already done with her.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I was surprised that the whole time Serena Joy was following her down the stairs, she was like, no, stop, no, you can't do this. Mm-hmm. And not one time did she say, she's pregnant, you can't do this, leave her here, or something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
But they didn't have any paperwork to show the commander when they marched her out.
Right. It's just like, at what point, I mean, there again, how powerful is the commander? He seemed like he's the architect, one of the chief architects of Gideon.
Right, but then when you saw the commander's council, was a different guy sitting in the fanciest chair
seems like there's one rung above him, but still you would think that these guardians can't just come in with a black mock tactical turtleneck and guns and with no warrants, no paper or nothing, say, hey, it's all fine. It's all fine. Because, like, if I'm the resistance, I'm like gold. Because guess who makes black turtlenecks? Canada. Guess who can probably get their hands on a couple submachine guns? Canada. All we got to do is knock on these guys' doors and one handmade at a time and be like, hey, it's all been taken care of. It's all been taken care of.
Well,
just take them all.
There's only so many times you can do that before. Yes, there's only so many times you can do that before, you know, they start laying down stricter policies and maybe actually needing some paperwork.
But that's funny because then that's actually would nudge that society towards accountability. Like, how long can a society go?
It's a sophomore society, I think.
Right.
The point.
But the point I was making is it seems
that's how Moira can get out, and that's how they can get her out right now.
Yeah.
The next fucker to try it is not getting out.
Right. I'm just saying that the broader point I was making is it seems like with society there's an upper limit to how much you can get away as a despot. Like, you know, we're you got North Korea. What are you laughing at?
I don't know where you're going with this, but I'm having fun imagining where you're going with
this. No, I'm saying, like, think about, like, all the undemocratic situations that have spontaneously been toppled in just the recent memory.
Okay.
Like, it's not like you can't point to a country that's 500 years old and has been ruled despotically by one family. Like the North Korea is the closest we got, and that only goes back to, you know, the Korean War, right?
What about England?
Are you saying that the Queen Mother is a despotic tyrant? That's actually an interesting take. I'd like to hear you elaborate on that.
All I'm saying is that it's not normal to have that many corgis.
She's there at the corgis. You know, this handmaid's thing is not a bad idea. We need some fresh blood. I don't know. Are all our corgis as inbred as the? No, I see. I can't. I kid. I can't be too hard in the UK.
That's all I got for that show.
I got one more thing.
Okay.
And I know you.
Well, then I have one more thing.
It's the orgy of handmade letters.
All right, you've got my thing.
That Elizabeth Moss engaged in.
Just with complete disagard, all of these. Because how many letters do you think were there? 1,000?
Oh, at least
1,000. 1,000 women's stories you're willing to just lose and be lost to time forever if a single person walks in on you?
Right. And that's the problem, is, like, I don't know what story they think they're telling, but, like, I'm misinterpreting in places because they played that as if it's a triumph.
Right.
And I want to be happy with her. Like, if they had shown her, like, taking a handful at a time to her bed and putting the covers over her head and by some kind of pin light reading and tears streaming down her cheek, I would be cheering her on. But not only does she lay them all out so she can swim through them Scrooge McDuck style, where anyone, she has no privacy.
Right.
No expectation of privacy. She gets Handmaid's Tale drunk on the tales that she's reading, passes out until the sun rises. Like,
uses the letters as blankets.
And I'm like, what happens if Serena Joy decides to be a bitch and wakes up extra early? What happens if the Martha comes in?
Right. That was frustrating.
What happens if the commander comes in? Like, it's like you are playing fast and loose with hundreds of women's death penalty type sacrifice.
Right.
I just, like, such a weird scene. And then she entrusts it to the Martha, which I don't, you know, Martha Rita, which is like a margarita made with, I don't know, beets. It's made with beets and gin.
It's just made with bread.
it's just bread and tequila. And not good bread, like the 17 grain barley shit
bread like she would make.
Right, exactly.
Just pour tequila into a bread maker and boom.
She got a Martharita. I just felt like the feelings I was feeling of, like, oh my god, I can't believe how crazy and irresponsible she's being. The everything they were telling me was like, oh, this would be, look at how amazing this is and what a great moment it is for her, which it was. I'm just like, damn, show some respect to the other lady sacrifice.
I'm just sad that they cut the scene of the Martha later doing the exact same thing in the bathroom after she found them.
Yeah. And then she gets pulled. Of course, she'll get confiscated by the eyes for doing that. And then she gives it to Nick. Nick's doing it. It just, it's one household at a time.
Right.
That's the thing. They're not even trying to smuggle those out. They're just trying to deliver them one person at a time.
Unless it's convenient, they downplay how many people actually are in that house. Because if there's a meeting or something going on, suddenly there's 20 servants.
Yeah.
Any other day, there's two.
Yeah. Now, I think there was a couple of really good performances this season. I felt like, Chuck Woman... Ralph Fiennes,
Serena Joy, and Commander Waterford.
Yeah, I'm talking about the actors though. I can't remember.
Oh, it's Joseph Fiennes.
Joseph Fiennes and
I don't know.
See, Chuck. I didn't feel like no. I felt like they're so weird. I didn't know what to make of their performances. And the Martha, the same way. And Nick, I felt like Nick was kind of crappy.
Right.
But Elizabeth Moss and
Alexis Bledel,
which again I have not seen her be excellent in anything,
right?
And then Samara Wiley really knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
And were, even though some of the stuff didn't make sense and didn't necessarily work, like, they were giving it their all. In fact, like, I couldn't believe Elizabeth Moss could shift into the gear she did when Serena Joy taunted her with her daughter.
Right.
And she just called her everything but her given name. It was insane.
Do you think it was scripted? Do you think she just?
I wonder if they just did to be like, just really off the top of your, just there. Off the top of your head. Just
we're gonna let this roll for 10 minutes. Just do what feels
this
right.
Woman is destroyed your life. You have an inch of glass from which you can try to stab and hurt her back. Go.
Yeah.
Because it was amazing. And that's the thing, like, for every Jezebel, you had an episode like that, or The Bridge, where I thought it was the scene where Elizabeth Moss was trying to talk the other handmaid from jumping into the, like, that was amazing.
Right, because she's also, while she's talking her off the bridge, she's got to talk herself off. Yeah. Why wouldn't she just throw herself over,
right,
too?
Yeah.
She's got exactly as many obstacles.
It was her giving herself a pep talk, which then... You know, I don't know. It seems like all of the handmaids are going to be radicalized by this season. And that's another way it could go. Just like a Red Dawn with handmaids. Like, that'd be kind of cool to see a bunch of submachine gun toting handmaids.
Right.
It's like, you know, something Alex Rodriguez would do.
Yeah. Robert Rodriguez.
What did I say?
Alex.
Alex Rodriguez. That's the baseball fucking player. Oh, my God. I'm not sure if I should mark that for an edit or just
leave it.
I am. Okay, so that's A Handmaid's Tale. It was...
Blessed be the fruit.
It was super, super high level when it was on all cylinders, and even when it was missing a few, it was still one of the best things on television. So I don't want to take... I don't want anyone to take my criticism as I hated this. I just... Because it's going to make... I can't see it not making the top 10 for the Baldies unless Jim just doesn't watch it.
Yeah.
And I have to use my force honor veto for that. But it was really good. And yeah. I just hope they take some of these issues and clean it up. Just like, you know, I did a lot of shows have this sophomore bump. And if it can do that, then wow. If it can turn into like The Leftovers type of jump from 1 to 2, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
All right, shall we talk about American Gods? We have not talked about the last three, including the finale, which came out last night. We haven't had a chance to watch because we're in the thralls of a House of Cards recap. House of Cards marathon. The ones we missed were, I think, Lemon Scented You. I think that's where we left off. A Murder of Gods, where they shot Mexican Jesus at the border, and we're introduced to the god Vulcan, which was awesome. A Prayer for Mad Sweeney, which they go back and kind of talk about, the Irish version of Shadow's Wife and Mad Sweeney's origin story, how he was, like, I think a Celtic king.
Yeah.
Who then became a leprechaun because of General Mills, which I thought that was kind of funny. But also that he had something to do with her car crash. I'm not sure about that revelation.
I don't know much about that either.
This is starting to seem awfully, you know, Star Wars prequels where Yoda and the Wookiee were always, and Chewbacca were always best buds. You know, it's like, really? He set that off? Like, what? And the big thing is, like, what the hell is Shadow? Who is Shadow? Why is he being recruited into all this craziness?
what do you want to start talking about?
Let's talk
about Matt Sweeney's storyline.
Like for example,
he and the dead wife.
Okay. Dead wife.
And their issues.
I like her quote, "What the fuck are you? What the fuck are any of you? But first, what the fuck are you?" I think that was delivered to Sweeney.
Yeah. Are they trying to make him in love with her now? Was that coin always meant to go onto her grave, and that's why he accidentally gave it to Shadow Moon?
Yeah, is this like a Bram Stoker's Dracula story where she's the reincarnated spirit of this woman? I don't know. That's kind of interesting. And when they put him together with the guy who's the gin fucker,
yeah,
like that is a super entertaining roadshow. In fact, I'm kind of bummed that it seemed like it's broken up.
Oh yeah, they released him so they get back to their story because they got in a car crash, which brought his memories back. Or he always knew,
yeah,
that he caused her car crash.
Surely.
But why?
I don't know. Someone
because
someone...
one woman devoted her entire life to leaving out bread and milk for him to eat and giving him all of her coins so that she could directly affect another person.
And this woman didn't, and she got recorded. Like, the other thing is, I'm not sure what Axis brings her from this Irish heritage. She's worshiping leprechauns to now her current incarnation is like somehow beholden to the Egyptian gods of death. I don't see how that those lines all connect. But I don't really care, because what I get from this show is Gillian Anderson dressing up as David Bowie and floating in like Marilyn Monroe a couple inches off the floor.
I mean,
and
they never give us a reason to like her, so why would we root for her storyline?
I'm not. I'm just thinking she's...
I read an article about how someone thinks that she's like the ultimate feminist badass, and I just think that's a terrible, terrible way to look at her.
I mean, she's powerful and interesting.
Only because
but...
she's got a magic coin inside of her.
Oh, wait. I thought we were talking about Gillian Anderson.
No.
The god of media is what I had moved on to.
No.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Well, I don't know. I mean, because I feel like Joss Whedon kind of has ruined this conversation a little bit, because there's like he kind of popularized this particular type of feminist icon, the Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the River Tam, the waify kind of ass kicking,
right?
You know, Barbie doll, which, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Men have Arnold Schwarzenegger for God's sake. And Keanu Reeves, like there is room for that type of female badass, but at this point, that type of female badass is a little bit played out, and they're even moving on to more interesting versions of that trope, like Atomic Blonde. Haven't seen it. I'm just assuming
she looks like a believable badass.
Well, not only that, but she's doing like other. She's doing interesting things with that stereotype by like leaning fully into like the James Bond mold, by even seducing women.
Right.
I mean, like I can't tell whether my eyes roll at that or I actually think it's clever. But you know, it's Charlize Theron.
Right.
She's going to be real badass doing it.
Right.
But yeah, that's all she is. She's just I mean, and they've got the fact that she's literally a rotting piece of meat is kind of gross/cool.
Yeah.
And how are they going to actually, like, the whole Mad Sweeney is he wants to take her back to a resurrectionist so she can have a real life so he can get his coin back.
But he got his coin back and he chose to keep her alive anyway. So
there's certainly some kind of triangle they're building there.
Right. So what were you saying about the god of media?
I just thought that where I thought you were getting at with is they haven't given us any reason to be sympathetic or think the new gods are cool. Like, right. They're just sketch of just like, oh, well, here's the technology guy and here's the media god and here's the – what's the other god?
There are a bunch of kids on the old god's lawn.
Yeah, and it's like –
Mr. World.
Like I'm sympathetic to Ian McShane because he's the protagonist from the point of view of the story they're telling. But in the grand scheme of things – why should I give a shit about any of these gods, and what is the point of the story? Are we going to throw off the shackles of the gods? Are we going to come up with, like, you know, are we going to all learn to love Mexican Jesus because he seems like the best of all of them? But right. Then we killed him with the god of, and you know, there's also like the god of Vulcan, where they got the small town that worships the Second Amendment so much that they're all a bunch of brown shirt wearing, jackbooted, crazy, not American Nazis, and that's like super broad and
right.
Not very thought. Like
Like, they haven't, they've spent a lot of time making these gods really cool and the whole story visually interesting, but I don't think there's a single relationship so far that I care about, and there's no real character that I'm rooting for because we haven't gotten to spend enough time with any of them.
Right.
I think.
And, you know, they also take time, like, the, you know, when Mr. What's his name? Anansi? The spider god? Anansi? You know, they gave him something interesting and profound and depressing and sad to say about that particular culture that he was representing. And then they get to, like, extreme right-wing America, or just right-wing America, you know, because it's a fairly mainstream conservative position that we should have the right to bear arms. And they just don't give it no nuance or any kind of, and I feel like that's a little lazy.
Right.
Like, oh, you're only going to articulate a viewpoint give any kind of complex nuance to a point of view that you agree with.
And what happened, I just remembered, what happened to the Queen of Sheba?
I don't know. She ate a few dudes. She ate a few women, and she's gone.
She hasn't met anyone else.
I don't know whether the other thing is the Jin's the same kind of way. Like, I don't know that we're meant to see these people again. Some of this stuff might just be like side color.
Well, then that's stupid.
Well,
if that person affects the story in no way whatsoever, then it doesn't. There's no reason it should have ever been there.
Yeah, I don't know.
You could have spent more time building up all of the other characters instead of spending time watching, you know, cosmic lovemaking.
Yeah.
Which is cool, but if that's how you feel, then save it for the second season.
Yeah.
If those two things don't play an integral role in the finale,
mm-hmm.
then I think it's a waste of time.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the Vulcan thing wasn't entirely uninteresting. It's just because they did that. There's this one speech he gave about, like, you know, how he's using fear as the tool to evoke worship from his population, and they say this every gunshot is a prayer, and every gunshot in a crowded theater is a prayer that makes them want to pray harder because they are all afraid that that's going to happen to them, and they arm themselves. But that's kind of a patronizing view, I guess, of that.
Right.
But I don't know. I just wish. I don't know I don't know why I care so much about not knowing where the story's going, because I am being entertained by and large. Now, I do not like the resurrected Laura. I think her character is terrible. I don't believe any of the chemistry between her and Shadow. I don't understand why it seems like she didn't give a shit about Shadow, and then she died and he comes back and now he looks like a fucking son. I don't know what the fuck that's about.
Right.
But like, I just don't. It's interesting that they've told a story where a person was not in love with another person who was in love with that person, and then person A died and now they're back in love with him, but they've given me no reason other than a glowing sun effect, so he looks like the son of the fucking Teletubbies world. That's the old, like, they haven't given me any other reason to pull for that relationship. And maybe I'm not supposed to, but then, you know, what the fuck?
Right.
So I mean, that was the only episode I thought kind of drug, that I was a little tedious of, like, their backstory, because none of it illuminated anything. Plus, she sleeps with Dane Cook, which automatically I feel like
right.
is so,
like, yeah.
just, she slid so far down the cool levels.
The cool levels?
Yeah. I'm not even talking Dane Cook as, like, a shitty comedian. I'm just like, look at him, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like, everyone that Shadow loved or cared about was a really secret piece of shit to him behind his back?
Yes.
That's bleak.
It is.
What's it mean? What's it all mean?
I don't know. We should probably watch the finale.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you going to read the book in between now and the next season?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then can I play... If the timing's right, maybe we should cover it, and I'll play the guy who is a non-reader.
Okay.
I've never played that role before.
Okay.
So I'm excited.
But if you have to read the book to gain an understanding of the show, then that's also another problem. But
well, that's why it's so great to have that dynamic.
Maybe our podcast will be better next year.
That's why it's so great to have that dynamic.
Right.
Okay. Shall we talk a little bit about House of Cards?
Yes.
House of Cards.
House of Cards.
I don't regret not covering it.
I fucking love this show.
Because there's no way. First of all, there's been no way to get Jim to do it. Second of all, there had been no way for us to, like, give it the kind of bald move treatment like you and I, because we just had the time.
But we did. Bald move, silver medal.
I'm just trying to be sensitive to you.
No, I get it. You're being sensitive to the audience that's expecting full coverage.
No, I'm being sensitive.
Your audience is expecting full coverage of this show that you've given it for the past couple of seasons since the beginning, right?
Yeah, we're there at the beginning.
Yeah, and it's just, I blame Game of Thrones, really.
Yeah.
I blame George R. R. Martin himself.
Yeah.
For fucking everything up. I mean, all the TV has been moved around, so...
Although, if all of this insanity had happened with Game of Thrones as well, then...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so
we wouldn't even be sitting here tonight.
Exactly. So, it worked out the way it worked out. Now, we are 11 episodes in. There's two more episodes to go. And here's the thing. This show's... I feel like this is the season where... Francis Underwood, played by Kevin Spacey. Kevin Spacey started phoning in a bit.
You think so?
And the writing is terrible. The writing is like some of the worst stuff I've ever seen. And laugh, but like in an entertaining way. For example, there's this one scene where the president, for whatever reason, gets invited to this, you know, the season two True Detective cult. That meets out in the Sierra Woods, and they worship god of Molech.
So you're just going to talk about all of the episodes we've watched so far?
Yeah, I don't have any like episode by episode guide. I just want to give you an example of my problem with the show.
Okay.
This is not going to be a deep spoiler.
I thought
dive.
We were going to talk about a few chunks of episodes at a time, then the next time we came back for American Gods, we'd talk about the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah. I think we're going to talk about the season up until now, and then we'll talk about the finale when we come back.
Okay.
But here's the thing. So Raymond Tusk is a member of this society because of course he is, and he's up early and the president's a second up and he goes
after we've already seen how many waiters it took to serve them the night before dinner.
Yeah, this guy's just casually cooking breakfast for all the bros. He says, "You're up early," and Francis says, "Always." And then literally he says, "How do you like your eggs?" And Francis says, "In the afternoon." What the That's like two opposite things to say.
I didn't know what that meant. Is that what that means? He likes to wake up late?
What other way would you say, why would you like eggs in the afternoon?
I don't know.
Eggs are a breakfast food. I like to eat at breakfast in the afternoon.
Man sex joke.
If he said, unfertilized, it would be a man sex joke in the afternoon.
What if he likes fertilizing his eggs in the afternoon?
That's not what he said.
But
I'm just saying that's terrible that you're saying that he, one of his attributes is an early rise. I'm just saying that's the kind of, and that happened bam, bam. That wasn't like two episodes later they'd forgot. That was like in the same scene, in the same breath.
I mean, I don't agree with the dialogue being that terrible. There are some certainly cheesy moments, but it's the same things that give you goosebumps because it's delivered so masterfully by Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright. I think we just have a completely different opinion about how the season went so far.
No,
but
I
loved
it.
I mean, the story and the things that are happening are stupid and insane and impossible and would never ever happen.
The worst that this show's ever been.
But it's kind of cool to see like the boundaries that you can push American politics to based on real, you know, rules, regulations, and laws. Like in a universe where it's possible that a vote can be delayed this much, here's exactly how it would work.
Yeah, and I believe, like, that's the thing. I don't feel like any of this stuff is extreme. I just feel like here's the thing that House of Cards has got going. Any one of five characters just walks into another character's office, tells them off and how it's going to be, and that works. That works for the president. It works for the first lady. It works for the vice president, who's also the first lady, when she's yelling at the actual vice president.
Unless she's the acting who isn't Donald president Blythe. At the time.
It works with Donald's when Doug Stamper just wants to stamp on anybody. He can just stamp on anybody.
He does a lot of stamping this
It season. Works when Leanne wants to go off half-cocked. It works for the hammer. It works for anyone. They just there's no finesse, no diplomacy, no you scratch your back, I'll scratch. It's just...
Oh, you're right.
Coming and punching someone in the dick, and then
that's how every character interacts this season.
And then then after Francis blows everything up and destroys, and he has no option, against all odds, the CEO of fucking Polyhop will be sobbing on a log and give him a bunch of data files full of incriminating material against his foes. I'm just like, oh man, this show didn't used to be this dumb.
Is this
Or maybe it's always been this dumb and now I'm
just
seeing
it. Is this a sequel to Silicon Valley? Because that guy seemed to be very much like a big head.
Right. Yeah. He's like the he's the poor man's version of Big Head.
There are very stupid. I guess the most unbelievable thing about the story is that the stupidest character is so unrealistic, even though I think that's exactly what a lot of people are like.
Yeah. And like Will Conway went from being like a candidate the Republicans wish they had to the fucking Phantom of the Opera, getting drunk and yelling at military
and
pilots.
Staying up all night with his PTSD flashbacks on that video game. And
yeah, and that's like, I thought that was poorly handled as well.
Do you think they set that story up poorly? Do you think that they wanted us to believe that there was some secret history to his war history? Like him stealing someone else's military record or claiming to do something different.
I think it's a Don Draper situation.
But it never built up to anything.
Not yet, and there's only two episodes.
I think his story's over now that he lost a presidency.
Yeah, like if you're right, and I think you are, then that's a really big what the fuck, because...
I just want to make sure I wasn't the only one that felt like it should have led up to something bigger.
I think they would say, well, it led up to him starting to unravel and reveal himself to be a not good commander, but I'm like, I don't know. And by the way, we can add Usher... The guy who's essentially a Kellyanne Conway, he can tell the president-elect to go fuck himself.
Yeah.
Anyone can tell anyone to go fuck himself, and it always works.
Right.
I don't know.
The president
know.
Says, just slam the door on him. It's fine.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And, like, you can jerk Doug's chain, and, like, that's the thing that really bugs me, and I'm glad that they gave Doug that scene where he's like, do you know all the fucking things I've done?
Yeah.
Just to help you win. Because it never really... I never understand why Doug is quite that loyal. Like, I mean, I know Francis helped him get clean and sober,
but
also...
There's got to be something that I don't quite understand, because, like, a Secret Service agent or, you know, Doug Stamper,
mm-hmm.
You can't be getting paid that much.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you were, what does it matter?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you live by this person's side, probably spends more nights there than he does in his own shitty apartment.
Yeah.
And if he's not in his own shitty apartment, he's sleeping with that donation fund lady's widow. I don't know. I just don't see what motivates those people.
Do you know the other thing that drives me crazy about Francis Underwood?
What?
First of all, he has the tenacity to go on and name five different decades going to be dominated by Underwoods in politics, and then says one nation
Underwood.
Like, oh my god.
Yes.
Oh my god. But his predilection for destroying valuable heirlooms that belong to this entire nation.
Oh my god.
Like, oh, here's a bust of I don't know,
Jefferson.
Probably, or maybe it's Washington. Break. Here's like you know, crossing of the Delaware, smash. I did like the scene where he's thinking about Meacham.
Yeah, he went back to the painting. He almost took it off to look, but just let it
great,
go.
Great granddaddy Underwood's not nearly the lover that Meacham was.
No, neither is that new fitness trainer, apparently. Wow.
That's the same guy. He's a Civil War reenactor, yeah. Those are the same characters.
Interesting.
But also, I feel like they did that.
Who gets attached to the president? Or the vice president?
What?
I just think that's a stupid thing to do.
To what?
To catch feelings.
Oh, yeah.
For Tom Yates to think that he's actually going to steal away the vice president.
And that's the other thing is, like, maybe Tom Yates would do this because he seems like he's a piece of work. And, you know, but why Robin Wright would... Again, I don't... Her and Francis' relationship is really complex. And I feel like Francis takes her for granted. And some of the stuff they're doing that I like, where Francis says in a side to us after they win, oh, she owes me. And then Claire says, not true. Almost like she's breaking a fourth wall, but you're not quite sure. But then she deliberately breaks the fourth wall like an episode later. And I'm starting to think like, oh, this is actually a clever way to start to synthesize these two stories.
Right. At some point she turns to us.
I felt like they did the storyline last season. And it's like kind of...
Well, at one point she turned to the camera and she said, listen, I know you've always been there.
Right. I'm not sure how I feel about you.
Yeah. And I don't care how you feel about me.
Yeah.
And I thought that was good.
But I want to get back to Great Granddaddy Underwood, because I feel like his plot only serviced so that Francis could tell Claire essentially to break up with Tom. And that he would have like, well, I'm doing it too. So like she would feel that that's what... But the thing is I feel like Claire would have come to that decision as soon as Thomas wouldn't get into his fucking head that this was a purely physical relationship.
Right, exactly.
Or maybe there's a little bit more of a mode, but you'll never come between me and Francis.
I mean, she's got to know that having...
And every time you try, it's going to just piss me off.
She's got to know that having him spend the night every night looks terrible.
Yeah, and it's also...
And I mean, I would have broken up with him for the fact alone that he just walked into a closed-door meeting in his socks.
Uh-huh.
What an asshole.
Right, right. Be like, yeah... Yeah,
and didn't even bother to act, you know, apologetic or respectful of the vice president, you know.
Can I also talk about how disappointed I am in every one of the fucking journalists on this show that voluntarily whores their profession out for what?
Oh, you mean real world journalists that appear on the show?
Yeah, Rachel Maddow, you're supposed to be
This is some shit for Fox and Friends, Rachel.
You're supposed to be telling the truth every night. That's what you say and how important it is. And then you are just going to essentially – maybe I'm the only one that this bothers, but I feel like in a culture where we're saying things are fake news, and journalistic credibility is at an all-time low.
I've seen all
these puff pieces where journalists are like, hey, man, maybe some of the problem is us. Maybe we should be more serious about how we do this stuff. I see all these fuckers, like Wolf Blitzer, Rachel Maddow, Chris Matthews. They're all fucking doing this stupid show.
It's really not real, you.
And they don't need to do it. You could do a fake news organization. You could have fucking Will from the newsroom have a cameo to interview him. That would actually be kind of cool.
I think the point of them having real world journalists is that a lot of the show's storylines mirror what's actually happening in our current political climate.
I understand why they want to blur the lines to make it more realistic. Is that what the journalists want to do? They want to blur the line between reality and fantasy?
I know you feel passionately about this, but I'm not sure that I care. I don't think that I care that Rachel Maddow was on a TV show, because I know that that wasn't a real news story she was doing.
Yeah,
but it makes you believe the scene that much more, because you can see that happening in real life.
I guess I also think they're not great actors.
I mean, in this show in particular, like if they're on Alien Resurgence, is that what it's called? Independence Day Resurgence.
I think that's bad too.
I'm saying that I think is bad because that's just a fake news. but they're trying to make you see the parallels between the real world that you're living in here.
I don't know. Like I said, it's literally fake news that they're engaging in. And I would, my perspective is I would try to stay as far from that by association as possible. Again, not, you know, in this particular, I always had this objection. This is a long-standing objection I've had on the House of Cards podcast. I just was kind of shocked to see this happen again what's happening, what the modern state of journalism is, with people accusing them of being fake and making shit up.
Yeah.
And like, it seems like this is a really important time for us to get our facts straight, but no, you know, we'll appear in the show for laughs and giggles, I guess. Like, that's the other thing. It's like, what do they get out of it other than the ego stroke? Is it worth it?
I don't know. It must be.
You don't care. Now I feel like a fucking asshole.
No, I'm just saying that we all have our things.
Yeah.
To get a bugaboo about.
I don't know. What do you think about bearded Putin?
Bearded Petrov?
Yeah.
Just as honorary as ever.
Yeah. But, I thought he was this close to making in a decent proposal to Claire.
What do you think,
about that Russian ship?
Yeah. What do you think about Jane Davis, our new character who we don't quite understand who she is or what she does, but she speaks all the languages?
I don't know, because it feels like... That's the other problem I have, is like there's... Raymond Tusk, I thought, was a worthy adversary for Francis Underwood, and they haven't had that good of a foil for him since.
Right.
And she just, like, to make her... Make her and Usher seem clever enough to square off that they sometimes have to cheat, where they're just inscrutable and I don't understand why they tick or why they're doing or who they're loyal to. I mean, it seems like it's cheating to introduce a character this late in the system that has this much influence.
Right.
Like global influence. And we've never met her before. Because if we had met her before, we'd understand what makes her tick, and she wouldn't be this thing right. that the writers could be playing coy with.
And now suddenly she's living at the White House, and she's everywhere in every meeting?
Yeah. It's like literally a Madeleine Albright type just walked onto the stage, and I've never seen her before.
Right.
Like, that's the one thing I think House of Cards does right, is they keep... They don't give a shit that you don't remember who the vice president in season one is. They don't give a shit that you don't remember who the, you know, House Minority Whip was. Like, they're just going to throw these characters at you.
Right. And especially with what good friends she appears to be with Kathy Durant.
Right. Yeah. Which I love Kathy Durant.
Oh, yeah. Kathy is a strong woman.
Yeah. And she looks like she's about to do some Underwood fucking.
Yeah, she is.
But I don't know.
Like, not that's the other thing. Is like
I was feeling like this surely would have to be the last season, which I felt like the last two right. or three seasons. But I'm two episodes ago. I don't see how they can possibly wrap this up.
No.
In fact, I kind of would be interested in seeing a Claire Underwood presidency, because Robin Wright, I am so in love with this woman and her the way she portrays Claire Underwood as perpetually amused. And what's the other word? Like she's looking at you and she's a bemused contempt. The way that, like, if you're out in public and you're like at a mall food court and you're seeing some other kids, children shove French fries up your nose, it's like,
right,
what a fucking idiot. I'm gonna laugh at you.
It's that's just how that's condescension or patronizing.
Because she thinks she's better than you and she's right. She's Robin Wright. And that's the thing. It's like she just always looks amazing and she always has these great, even when like, I mean, I think the most egregious fuck you speech to somebody is the one she gave to Donald Blythe.
That was bad.
But I also think that they were trying to provoke that reaction. Like, there's the other thing is there's a lot of wheels within wheels of the show because I'm not covering it as seriously as I've done in years past where I'm like, I'm not totally getting
okay.
where all these machinations are going, but. I don't know. I really like Robin Wright, and it would be interesting to see a House of Cards continue with her being the president.
Right. I'm excited about the last two episodes, which we're going to go home and watch tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's either that or American Gods.
All of it. Let's all just of watch it? All oh, of no. the television. Just
never go to bed. Never go to bed. Neither one of us have jobs other than this.
well, that's true for half of us.
The one is getting paid for this one. The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was to convince Cecily that something doesn't exist. I feel like there's more we could talk about on House of Cards, but
I'd rather talk about it and like how the whole season goes.
Okay. All right. We don't have any feedback. I'd like to encourage people, if you have a take about our hot takes about American Tales or Handmaid's Gods or House of the Whopper, you can send it in to tv@baldmove.com where we will entertain those. And it's going to be great because we're coming back essentially to talk about the finale of American Gods and House of Cards.
I mean,
probably next week.
There's a new show that's starting on Netflix called Glow. There's,
oh, the gorgeous! Yeah, it's actually out. I think the gorgeous ladies of wrestling.
I mean, there's so much TV out there that when we come back, who knows what we're going to talk about? But we're watching
yeah.
it.
Yeah, Bald Move TV. It's going to be where it's all the television.
All
what more
it.
Can we say?
All of it.
So we'll be back. I know Jim and I will be talking finales of Better Call Saul and Fargo this week, and then Cecily and I will be back the week after to talk finales of American Gods and House of Cards.
Oh my God!
So much excitement. TV@baldmove.com. If you want to say something, we will see you then. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
See ya.